It's a poem by Robert Frost, who is a famous poet, and the name of the poem was The Road Not Taken. And I'm sure most of you have heard this at some point in your lives, but I thought I'd read it because I think the title of the sermon today, if you wanted a sermon title, would be The Road Less Taken. But here's the poem. I'll just read it and for what it's worth here. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both. And be at one traveler, long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other. It was just as fair and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear, though it as for that, the passing there, see, I'm a real good reader of poetry, aren't I? You can tell I don't read a lot of poet. You know how you're supposed to kind of make the words rhyme in? Well, I don't, but anyway. Right in the middle of a stanza here, I'll finish, and had warned them really about the same. You're thinking, what did you say before that? Well, get the tape. And both that morning equally lay, in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh. Somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. You know, there are two roads, I guess you could say, in life. I had many of you probably have heard of Yogi Berra. If you ever care about baseball, you've heard of Yogi Berra. He's a famous catcher for the New York Yankees, and I think he's still living, and he would always say these comments that were kind of, they didn't make a lot of sense, but then when you think about them, they did. But he made a comment about one of his quotes. He said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. Think about it. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. Didn't say which way to go. It just says take it. Well, there are basically two ways of life, and one is much traveled. You know, one, you can just see it's just beaten down. People have taken it forever. And then there's another road of life that not as many people take. And there's a scripture over in Matthew 7 that I think relates to this pretty well. I thought I'd read that to begin. Matthew 7, verse 13 and 14. In the Sermon on the Mount, very familiar, I'm sure. But first, chapter 7, verse 13 and 14, where it says, enter by the narrow gate, just like the two forks in the road. Enter by the narrow gate, for wide and broad is the gate that leads to destruction. And there are many who go in that by that way. Because narrow, though, is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. You know, in this particular life, most people take the easy way. And then when things don't go well, they wonder why. Now, I am going to read a little bit. That's why I brought my glasses here to start, because I speaking of this, I thought this was interesting to me. I did a little history work and checked and looked into Ambassador College, when Ambassador College, you know, sort of the history even before Ambassador College. And there were a couple men that you've probably heard of. One of them, the other I doubt, I'd never even heard of him. But talking about the Ambassador College campus in Pasadena that Mr. Armstrong, you know, bought back in the 50s, I believe it was. And there were two men pretty much symbolized, or I guess you would hear about, from that land that was bought. One man's name was Eldridge Fowler. I don't know how many of you have ever heard that name. The other man's name was Hewlett C. Merritt. Some of you may have heard his name. But I'm going to read a little bit here, and only take about 10 minutes, because I thought it was interesting about their life. Now, neither one of these men, I don't know, they both claim to be Christians, and of course, it's not for me to judge, because all I know about them is what I read, but I think you'll find interesting the two different comparisons of these two men, because the Ambassador College campus, like I say, I'm going to read a little bit here for a short period of time. The Ambassador College campus in Pasadena has history wrapped in two men. The first man, as I said, his name was Eldridge Fowler, F-O-W-L-E-R. Now, in 1946, yeah, this is, I said 50s, but it's 1946, The Radio Church of God, which was called back then, Herbert Armstrong purchased what became later known as Ambassador College Library. And if you've ever been on the Pasadena campus, there was a library there. It was an old building, but it was a beautiful building. And this library was actually came from the relatives of Eldridge Fowler. That's where it was, who was bought from. Now, Eldridge Fowler had long since died. He was born in 1837. But just a little background here, which I found interesting. He moved to Pasadena, California in 1901, and he died in 1904. So he only lived in this part of the country for 4 years. And there's some interesting things that happened about this man. Now, his wife, after he died in 1904, his wife lived until 1931, and she owned this area, like I said, that later became Ambassador College Library, part of the land. She owned that till she died in 1931. And during her life as a widow, she built what later became known as the Ambassador College Lower Gardens, where graduation was usually held. And if you've ever been out there, you would know where that is. It's down below the library. Now, there's a few interesting comments about Mr. Fowler. And I'll just read a few of these, and some of these are quotes, and I'll tell you when it's a quote. But in 1837, he was born, and he was orphaned at an early age as both of his parents died. But over time, he became very wealthy, and he became very rich, and he amassed a fortune in lumber and grain shipping business. So he became a very wealthy man. Now, he was the brother-in-law of Cyrus McCormick, who, if you've know your history, he invented the reaper, and I think possibly, you know, several things synonymous with farming. But he became very rich, and he moved to Pasadena in 1900, and he was 1900 or 1901, I believe it was, and he was 67 years old at the time. And in 1901, yeah, he moved there in 1900. In 1901, he bought this building that later we knew as the Ambassador College Library. And in November of 1904, he died. Now, here's what Pasadena newspaper said about Mr. Fowler. And I quote, they called him a philanthropist to no small degree. In 4 years living in Pasadena, he did much for the city. And it mentions here, the Pasadena Evening Star, which is a newspaper that no longer exists, but back then when I was going back and doing this research, it said he was retiring and modest. He wasn't a loud person. He wasn't a person many people even knew much about. But he said he was retiring and modest in disposition as to his good works, that he did not let his right hand know the many generosities that his left hand was giving. That was a quote in the newspaper. He was a very giving person. He gave all types of things. And it said he shrunk from being called a benefactor. He didn't want people always knowing all the things he did. He was doing all these things, but many of them were in secret to help other people. Quoting again from this Pasadena Evening Star newspaper about Eldridge Fowler, it said his business successes have been gained by foresight and enlightened principles of benefiting others while gaining a fortune that he still regarded as a trust. Quoting still, he says, he ensured that the blessings of his lifetime would continue to bear fruit for the betterment of the world after his death. Now, his wife, remember, he died in 1904, and she lived in 1931. She owned a lot of land in Pasadena. In fact, she owned the land that later became Huntington Memorial Hospital, which was known as one of the nicest hospitals. It was definitely the nicest hospital in Pasadena, but it was one of the nicest hospitals in Southern California. And it says, in her death, when she died in 1931, here's what the Pasadena Star News said about her, and here's another quote. It said, the fruits of her generosity bloomed in many parts of the world, but more perhaps than even her friends realized. Said she was very modest, and she was known for the cards and letters of encouragement she would send to people. And a report about her written in a magazine called Boys Republic. I'm sure that's not, I've never heard of that one, but, you know, it was back then. Here's another quote about her. It said, the secret of Margaret Fowler's success was an overwhelming desire to be of service to others. You know what? You know, sometimes we sit and we kind of puff ourselves up and we say, oh, we know this, we know that. This was a woman that God, I mean, God's going to love this woman. God loved that woman, and God, when that woman understands certain things, this is a woman and her husband were two incredible individuals, and it's interesting that they happen to be the ones that sold part of the land that became Ambassador College. Now, talking of Mr. Fowler again, it says one, well, this is sort of a sidelight here, but it says one factor of his material success was he obtained the mineral rights to most of the state of Minnesota. So he obviously was a very wealthy man. Now, it said, now here, so we kind of leave Eldridge Fowler and we go to the other man. About 6 months after the death of Eldridge Fowler in 1904, a man by the name of Hewlett C. Merritt began building his home in the same area. And it was several hundred feet to the north of Mr. Fowler's home. And the home was later acquired by Ambassador College in 1956, and it became known as Ambassador Hall. So if you've ever been to Pasadena, there was the library, and then there was this Ambassador Hall where numerous things were done there, and it was a very beautiful, elegant building. But it says, Hewlett C. Merritt had one of the most fabulous building careers in American history. He was a millionaire at the age of 18. Now, think about it. This was back in the early 1900s, and he was a millionaire at the age of 19 by selling real estate. How many 19-year-old or 18-year-olds are selling real estate? But he was a millionaire, and he was a multimillionaire within another year by the age of 19. It says at age 21, he was the youngest railroad president in the entire world. Later, he became president and board chairman of 138 different corporations, and he was the largest single stockholder in U.S. Steel, United States Steel. In 1897, he moved to California, and John D. Rockefeller, we've heard of John D. Rockefeller, wrote him a letter offering him the highest salary in the nation if he would just come back to the East Coast to work for him. That's how impressive financially he was. Now, John D. Rockefeller wrote that he had never met a man that had as much all-around business ability as Mr. Merritt. And Merritt could point to other accomplishments. See, the Rose Parade was closed down once because of lack of money, but he put the money in to keep the Rose Parade going. But there's a more about Mr. Merritt, and I'll read what the Pasadena Star News said about him, comparing him to Mr. Fowler. It said about Mr. Merritt's personality, and I quote, says, since he was a child, competition and a desire to win, to have the biggest and best of everything, was his ruling passion in life. Mr. Merritt wanted everything, and he was one of the richest men in the world at that time. A magazine article said this about Mr. Merritt. It said, I quote, in Pasadena, Hewlett C. Merritt is a sharply controversial man, in part because of his great wealth, but also in part because of the long line of lawsuits and counter-lawsuits with which he is involved. It said, relatives, employees, business firms, art galleries, all have sued or been sued by him, you know, numerous ones. It says one of Mr. Merritt's neighbors down the street was a man named Leishman. And Mr. Leishman, who later became known as Mr. Pasadena because of his civic involvement, he said a lot about Hewlett C. Merritt. And this Mr. Leishman, if you look back in history of the church in Pasadena, he was always a friend of Ambassador College. But they had an oral interview late in Mr. Leishman's life, and Mr. Leishman spoke quite frankly about Hewlett C. Merritt. Here's what he said. He said Hewlett C. Merritt had a picture of John D. Rockefeller in his room, a full-length picture that took up a large portion of the wall. He said, I think I was the only friend he had in town, or his father was the only friend he had in town. He made everybody so unhappy. He was selfish, he was self-centered, he was a hard man, this is all a quote. He had to have a lot of help running his house, he had so much money. But he couldn't keep anyone to work except for a short period of time because they would all get mad at him and quit. Said another thing he noticed was he always wore these beautiful suits and beautiful clothes, but he never paid for them. It said he would get the tailors, the various tailors, to make these fabulous, beautiful suits for him, and then he would refuse to pay because he would say they didn't fit right. And then it said after that he would negotiate down to get a better price, or sometimes he just would just not ever pay. And he had all this money, but yet he wouldn't pay. Compare him to, remember this, Mr. Fowler and Mr. Fowler's wife. It said once a Pasadena photographer was hired by Hewitt C. Merritt to take pictures of him and his family, and he wouldn't pay for the pictures because he said he didn't like the results, but yet he refused to give the pictures back. He had all this money, and yet he just he didn't seem to care, did he? In the early years of Ambassador College, it was related that numerous students at Ambassador College worked for Hewitt C. Merritt, and usually they never got paid. He refused to pay them. After he died in 1956 and Ambassador College bought what became Ambassador Hall, it was discovered that Hewitt C. Merritt had secretly tapped into the Pasadena City water main and was paying nothing for his water. He was doing all this for free, getting all this stuff for free. It's amazing. Now, check this one out. This is, again, I quote, a magazine article had an interview with Mr. Merritt late in his life, and they asked him to describe his philosophy of life. What is your philosophy? What made you this great man? And he said, and I quote, just following the Ten Commandments. I'm not finished with the quote. He said, just following the Ten Commandments, my wife and I have never broke one of them in our life. It's Mr. Leishman in this interview, and I'm wrapping this up here. Mr. Leishman mentioned a young female accountant that worked for him one day. She went out to lunch in 1956 to a local grocery, and she came back and said, who died that everyone's so glad about? Mr. Merritt had finally died. And people were just so happy that he was gone. And I thought it was interesting because Mr. Merritt sold what later became Ambassador Hall and some of the land that Ambassador College sat on, and Mr. Fowler's wife did the same. Notice the difference in the two people. You know, it's been said that everyone leaves a legacy of some kind, and each human being makes some mark in the world. And there was a book. You probably heard of Stephen Covey. He died, I think, in the last year. And he had in one of his books, he said, there is a desire to leave a legacy is a primary human need. He said, each person, when they die, there's one of three reactions to their death. One is joy at their death. You know, people, it's like, oh, they're finally gone. Well, I mean, let's hope. We don't know too many like that, but you know, there are people like that. I mean, don't you think it was joy when Adolf Hitler was finally dead? One is joy. Second is indifference. It's like, oh, well, big deal. Let's go on. Or third is sorrow at their death. If our, your, my, or anyone's death results in sorrow to others, to some degree, we've walked the road less traveled, haven't we? We've walked the road less traveled. If there's some sorrow at our death. Well, since I was kind of going back into the history a little bit today, I thought what I would do for the remainder of the sermon is take a look at an article that was written in February 14th, 1941, by Herbert W. Armstrong, actually. It was a co-worker letter written back when the church was called the Radio Church of God. It was a co-worker letter. And of course, nobody does these things perfectly, including him. But the article was entitled 10 Daily Questions. And these words, I thought, are applicable today as they were back then. And it sort of started out like this. It says, hey, how are you doing? You know, when people say, hey, how are you doing? Some people say, man, I'm doing great. Others says, I'm doing terrible. You know the difference. And, you know, all of us make mistakes. I mean, I know all of us get up on the wrong side of the bed sometime. I mean, I can only get up on one side because Penny's laying on the other side, and I don't want to crawl over because she's going to yell at me. No, I'm just kind of kidding. I'm kidding, aren't I? I don't usually crawl over you. I just say, get up, move on, go make the coffee. Some people say, hey, I'm doing great. Others say, I'm doing terrible. Some says, I couldn't be better. And others will say, do you have the time for me to tell you my problems? And like I say, we all have this, but it's sort of, we live in a superficial age, don't we? How many times do you hear the words, have a great day, and do you really wonder if people really think about it? Well, I want to refer back to this article, this 10 Daily Questions, because the point is, do we really think about how our day is going to go each day? Do we actually think about what our day might be like, or do we just sort of fall into it? And again, we all, from time to time, fall into it, but do we plan for each day in a way that has a chance to succeed overall? And as Christians, we need to ask ourselves. And this article from February 14th, 1941, is just as applicable today. You know, I started getting the plain truth back in the 60s. And you know, the thing is, when you look at the articles, now there are articles about prophecy and things like that. Let's face it, they didn't happen at the time. But when you look at Christian living articles, they're as applicable today as they were then. I mean, you look at them, you think you could just go right on down the line, as much today as then. And I think this article in 1941, it's just as easy and good for us to think about it today as then. Ten questions. You may want to, you could write it down or think about it or whatever you want to do. But, and I'm not taking a lot of time on any of them, just something for us to think about as we go about our day. Because, you know, everybody knows in Pasadena, that knows anything about the history there of this Eldridge Fowler and his wife, what wonderful people they were, and how much they did for the city of Pasadena. I mean, I've been to that Hunter Memorial Hospital. It's an amazingly beautiful hospital, and they have some of the best doctors in the hospital. And I haven't seen it in years now, probably since the late 70s, but it was a beautiful hospital, well-known, well-respected, and all the landscape. And then you've got this Hewitt C. Merritt, was a multimillionaire, and he was tapping into the Pasadena water system to get his water for free. I mean, come on. Let's take a look at these questions that we could ask ourselves each day to ask ourselves, well, how are we doing, and maybe how we could maybe have a little better day. Number one, question to ask is, did I awake spiritual in a happy, prayerful attitude, and was I watchful to keep my mind from wandering this morning? Did I awake spiritual in a happy, prayerful attitude, and was I watchful to keep my mind from wandering this morning? They say the most important meal of the day is breakfast. Now, if that's true, I'm in trouble because I don't usually have breakfast. I have a cup of coffee, I might have a couple pieces of toast. But they say, you know, but the point is, how do you start off your day? How do you start off the day? Now, let's take a look at Job chapter 1, because I found it interesting how Job started off his day. And, of course, Job had some trials, didn't he? And he had some thoughts and questions and doubts and discouragement. I was looking back in Ecclesiastes. Job's not there, is it? Job chapter 1. 1 verse 1. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright, and one who feared God and shunned evil. Now, he wasn't perfect, but he was upright man. He wanted to do right. And he had 7 sons. He had 3 daughters. They were born to him. And also his possessions were 7,000 sheep. I think of this Eldridge Fowler a little bit, a man that had all these things, but yet he wanted to give to others and didn't even want to brag about what he was giving. He had possessions. He had 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen. Think about having 500 yoke of oxen. That's a lot of oxen, isn't it? 500 female donkeys and a very large household, so that this man was the greatest in all the people of the East, a very famous man, but yet he was, remember, he was upright and he was a good man. And he tried to do right. So his sons would go out and feast in their houses, each in his own appointed day, and they would send and invite the three sisters to eat and drink with them. So it was when the days of the feasting had run their course that Job would send and sanctify them and would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Job did this regularly. He would get up each morning and pray and ask God to help his children. And in the same sense, I guess we could ask ourselves, do we start off our morning with some prayer? Do we just rush out or do we plan to think about what we're going to do that day and how our day is, we want it to go? Now, there is some truth to the statement about getting up on the wrong side of the bed. Some people just seem to do that most of the time in life. But when someone constantly, now think about it, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, when someone constantly complains, now, I know with what's going on in our world, what's going on in our country, Penny and I tend to sit around and talk about how bad things are, because they are. They really are. They are bad, but we have to look, you look at what God's got in store for the future. And when I look and I see people on television, our leaders and so forth, saying things that you know isn't true, it gets hard. But yet, when someone constantly complains about everything, you get to the point you just don't want to be around that negativism all the time. I don't believe sometimes any of us could realize how negative comments can affect our attitudes. So that was the first one. See, each one, just some things to think about, and they blend together to some degree, but just 10 daily questions that I think we can ask ourselves. And if we have an area we think, yeah, I could do a little better in that, it's something to think about, isn't it? Number two to ask ourselves, you could ask yourself beginning or the end of the day, have I this day kept my mind cleaned, my thoughts, my contemplations on the things above, in a continual, happy, positive, prayerful attitude? And the answer probably is not all the time. At least I know I don't all the time. Have I kept my mind clean, my thoughts, my contemplations? And here's what we tend to fall down on sometimes. On the things above, in a continual, happy, positive, prayerful attitude. Sometimes you just get weighed down by all this, the negativism of life and all the trials and tribulations that people go through. I remember when I was a teenager, I so much wanted to be a great singer. I can't sing a lick, can I, Penny? I'm a horrible singer. In fact, when they asked me to lead songs at the feast, I was kind of nervous because I didn't want them to hear my voice because it's so bad. But I can remember practicing in my bathroom when I was a teenager, and I'd just be singing. I thought, who in the world will listen to that? But I thought, you know, that was when Elvis Presley and all these, and I thought, man, I could be big. Well, that was serious. That wasn't, yeah. No, it seems odd that I even thought that I could be, I thought I was going to be a lot of other things. I remember my son used to talk about what he's going to be when he grows up is a general manager of a Major League Baseball team. I kept saying, Stephen, there's only so many teams, and what are the chances you're going to be picked? Because, you know, it's always they pick people they know, and he was like, oh, no, I know how to do it. Well, he's not a general manager of a Major League Baseball team. In fact, he just got a job about a month ago, and I was thankful for that. But it's working for Enterprise, and he's, you know, I'm just happy he's got a job. And he told me I'm on the fast track to management. And I'm like, yeah, okay, good. I hope he is. But you know how sometimes we want to grasp for those things that are kind of a little out of our realm at the time. You know, you want to be positive, but you know what I'm saying? It's like I would never had a chance to be a great rock star unless I could do, what's that Beyonce where she lip-sang the You know, if I had somebody singing behind me and I just did that, I could really do a good number on that. But, you know, I was never going to be a singer. But yet, somehow in my mind, you know, you have these thoughts. But yet, let's look at Philippians 4, because it's good to be positive. Philippians 4, and you know this verse very well. It's a very famous verse, 4, verse 8. But Paul was going through, talking to the Philippian church, and he said, "Finally, brethren, whatever things are true." Well, how much lies are there out there? And we can just focus on all these lies we hear. And it just weighs you down, all these lies. But it says, think on things that are true. Don't worry about what's a lie. Just make sure we're not a liar. And whatever things are noble, you know, the good things, the things in life that are pure, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. And there are. Yes, we live in a world that is falling apart. But there's a lot of good things to focus on. A lot of good things to focus on in life and blessings. So, you know, have I kept this day? Have my thoughts been on things above? And have I been positive? Number three, have I partaken three times of spiritual food by submissive Bible study and earnest prayer along with God? In short, have I grown today with God? I put, have I partaken three times, and this is from the article, have I partaken three times today of spiritual food by submissive Bible study, earnest prayer along with God? In short, have I grown with God today? Have I grown with God today? Psalm 55. Verse 16 and 17, a psalm of David. It says, "As for me," David says, "I will call upon God, and the Lord shall save me. Evening and morning and at noon, I will pray and cry aloud." David says, "I'll cry to God in the morning. I'll cry to God at night. I'll cry to God in the middle of the day." And he says, "God's going to save me." Do we think about taking time? And you know, you can only determine how much time, and you can only determine how, but do we take time alone with God and tell God our problems and what God needs? I remember one year, I was at a sales meeting in my company I used to work for, and it just happened to be over Passover. That happened a couple of different times. But one year, I was down there, and I was in Miami. So I went to Passover in Miami. And I remember going there to Passover and just feeling lonely because I didn't know any of the other people there. Now, they were God's people. And they were people that were trying to serve God. But yet, it still, I thought, man, I wish I was around some of the people I know. Well, God was still there in that Passover just as much as he would be at the Passover if I had to take it alone somewhere. But the point of the matter is, we ask ourselves, do we take time to grow with God each day? Number four. Have I walked by faith? You know, when you take a look at all these, you think, well, nobody's perfect on here. Anybody thinks they got this all down pat might need to really take a harder look at themselves, because none of us do it perfectly. But it says, have I walked by faith, asking God for wisdom and guidance in all things, committing every little problem to him and trusting him with it? Have I walked by faith, asking God for wisdom and guidance in all things, committing every little problem to him, trusting him with it? When we're in a trial, that's when we really need God or realize how much we need God. But we need him just as much when everything seems to be going great. But how much do we trust God? Jeremiah 31. Jeremiah chapter 31. It's not 31, it's 33. Jeremiah 33, beginning in verse 1. Notice what Jeremiah said. Moreover, the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah a second time. Let me read the first time. He came a second time while he was still shut up in the court of the prison. Jeremiah was in prison. Didn't look real good for Jeremiah. He's in prison. And here's what God said to him. Thus says the Lord who made it, the Lord who formed it, to establish it. The Lord is his name. He said, Jeremiah, call to me, and I will answer you and show you great and mighty things which you do not know. He said, Jeremiah, you have no idea what I can do. I mean, I think of that poor man over in Iran who was put in prison, sentenced to 8 years for being a Christian. How do you think he feels over there all alone? We don't know everything or hardly anything about him, but he's over there in a prison. He probably feels all alone. And God said to Jeremiah, he was in this prison the second time, and he's like, what's going to happen to me? He said, call to me, God told Jeremiah, and I'm going to answer you. Jeremiah, talk to me, is what he's telling him. Because Jeremiah had a tendency to get real down and discouraged. And I'll give a sermon on Jeremiah sometime, God willing. Jeremiah was just, woe is me. Oh, why me? I don't want to do this. I mean, there's example after example of Jeremiah saying, I don't want to be a prophet. And God said, you're in prison, Jeremiah. Call on me. I'm going to answer you, and I'm going to show you great and mighty things that you don't even know about. God knew so much more than Jeremiah had even thought about. Jeremiah had to walk by faith because he was stuck down in that prison. He had to ask God for help. He had to commit his problems to God because he had no other way out. And as you read on, he got released from that prison in a sort of a miraculous way. You know, we can watch all these shows on television telling you how to do it. We can go to all these bookstores telling you how to do it. And yet, how often do these shows say, call on God. Call on God. They always talk about I heard somebody talk about how Oprah, and I have nothing against Oprah, but she's such a spiritual person. What does that mean? Such a spiritual person. I don't know anything about her one way or the other, except what does it mean? People talk about spiritual, but you know, God is the one. Only God's going to resurrect anyone after death. Number five. Have I exercised self-discipline, denying impulse and doing what God's Word shows ought to do instead of what I might just want to do? Have I exercised self-discipline, denying impulse, doing what God's Word shows me I should do rather than just what I might want to do? You know, In Chattanooga, when I used to live there by myself in an apartment, I'd work there during the week, and then I'd go home and I would spend the weekend with my mother and my sister. I did that for a while, a few years, and I remember, I mean, this was a blessing, but my company paid for my apartment, and my company paid for my meals. So, and Penny, I'll tell you, I can't cook. I mean, she made the comment when he was giving the sermonette. She should have been listening to the sermonette about the chili cook-off. But you know what she said to me? You can never cook chili. I thought, well, that's not nice. But she's right. But, yeah, he's talking about this. She says, well, you could sure never do that. And she's absolutely right. And I could if I just took the time to learn, couldn't you? Anybody could learn how to cook. But it's just something I would go out and I would eat every night while I was in Chattanooga, they would pay for my meal. So I'd go out, man, I was living large, man. I would go out to Carrabba's and, you know, Macaroni Grill and Outback. Man, I was living large, and I was getting kind of large too. But I got to where I didn't appreciate that. I got to where I just like, man, where am I going to eat tonight? Well, I should have just learned to cook. And I'm sure, and actually my company after a while said, we're not paying for those meals anymore. So I thought, I should have been careful. But they quit paying for those meals. But it was pretty good there while it lasted. But I didn't appreciate it. Have I exercised self-discipline, denying impulse, doing what God's Word shows ought to do rather than just what I want to do? It's not wrong to go out and have a nice meal. Don't get me wrong. But I just didn't appreciate it that much. Here's a scripture on this point. 1 Corinthians 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Paul talking here, verse 24 through 27. He says, do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way to obtain it. But it doesn't mean you're always going to win first place, but run for the prize, it said. In God, eternal life, he gives all kinds of prizes. You don't have to be the only one to win it. And everyone who competes for the prize, here's what they have to do. It's temperate in all things. You've got to train your body. I know I'm embarrassing here, but I remember when we had camp last year, Morgan Green wanted to know if he could run every day, even though he's at camp. And what is it, like, how many miles? Eight? Oh, 100 yards? Oh, is that all you run? Big deal. I could do that. No, he would run several miles. And I remember that first day at camp, it was hot. It was 100 degrees. And it was around middle of the day, and he's out there running. Because he wanted to get better. I didn't see him do it again, though. No, he ran every morning after that. It because he wanted to become a better runner. And Paul says here, you got to be temperate. You've got to watch things. You can't drink a lot of soft drinks and eat a lot of Häagen-Dazs. And, of course, you know, because I use those, I've done that. But you got to be careful. It says, now, they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we do it for an imperishable crown, a crown that never fades. He says, therefore, I will run, thus not with uncertainty. Thus I'll fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body, said Paul. And I bring it into subjection. That's hard to do. I bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself might be disqualified. Paul could say all these things about what to do. And he says, but I got to do it too. Because he said, I want to be in the kingdom too. So, exercising self-discipline isn't easy, is it? But it's what we have to do to grow. Number six was my speech and conversation today kind, cheerful, and soft? Was my speech and conversation today kind, cheerful, and soft? How many arguments could be stopped by just a kind, soft word? Again, who hasn't failed in these areas? Well, maybe I'm the only one that's failed in all of them, but I think we probably all look at it and say, oh, no. But, you know, certain areas you think, oh, no. But it's easy to get in an argument. The hard part is to stop an argument. Some people seem to be looking for a chance to get in on any argument. Yet we can stop an argument usually by just knocking the other guy down. By walking away. Just cut out that last comment about knocking her down. I've told you this before, but I'll never forget. I was living in New Orleans. I took Penny by where I used to live when we were down in New Orleans that time. And I went down to that Pizza Inn to get that pizza one day, and I was driving back, and I wanted to get back and eat it at my apartment, and some motorcycle guy drove by, and I blew my horn at him. And that was a big mistake, because he whipped that old motorcycle around, and he ran me off the road in his motorcycle when I was in a car. Yes. Doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? And he started cussing me, and he says, if you don't roll down that window, I'm going to break this window. And I don't know what I should have done. But I rolled down the window, and I've never apologized more to anybody in my whole life. And I said, I'm so sorry. I don't know why I did that. And I'm thinking, why am I telling him this? But I didn't want him to hurt me. He was big. And he said a few words that I will not repeat. Got his motorcycle and shot off down the road. Veterans Memorial Highway. It's a big road, isn't it? Big highway. And I just sat there like, what happened to me? And look at this pizza. It's getting cold. But I thought, man, why did I honk that horn? James chapter 1. Verse 19 and 20. Therefore, my beloved brethren, says James, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man. Yeah, I should have told that guy, listen, get out there and read James 1:19. Just shut up and don't be mad at me. No, I was like, no, I wasn't worried about quoting scripture right then because I didn't think he was too interested in the Bible. I just wanted him to go home or wherever he wanted to go. I didn't care where he went as long as he's away from me. Be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Man's wrath doesn't work. Number seven, is have I exercised patience today? Have I been charitable toward others, showing tolerance and love, or resentment, jealousy, and anger? Have I exercised patience today, or have I been charitable toward others, showing tolerance and love, or have I shown resentment, jealousy, and anger? Some people just will not let things go. They hold it inside like that root of bitterness, like that cancer that just won't go away. Now, staying in James, James 1, again, James 1, verse 2, 3, and 4. James says, my brethren, count it. Oh, this is so hard to take. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Man, take that out of there is what you think, isn't it? But James said, count it all joy when you fall into all trials. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. You know, when we just take it and move on, we learn to be patient. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Trials can produce patience. Have I exercised patience? You know, I remember years ago, back when, remember, how could you forget the Hanging Chad time when George W. Bush ran against Al Gore. And remember, it was the big never-ending battle about who was going to win. And I remember once being at lunch in one of my hospitals I used to work at, and I was having lunch with a number of people that I knew real well. And, you know, I never had been to any of their houses or anything, but I knew them, and there was this one woman that I always liked her. She's a nice person. She's another sales rep, and we would all eat together sometime and talking about things. Well, I didn't realize how much she loved Al Gore. And people started talking about this election, and I made the mistake. Should have just kept my mouth shut. I said, Al Gore makes me sick. I said those words. Why I said it, I don't know. Well, I said it because I felt it, but I shouldn't have said it. She jumped on me. She said, well, I want to tell you something. George Bush makes me sick. And I thought, what have I gotten myself into? You know, they say never talk about politics or religion. But I said, oh, well, you know, it's they all have problems. But I thought, why did I say that? And what was the point? They weren't even talking about the election, I don't think. But somehow I had to open my mouth. But But I never forgot that. Number 8. See, we're on the home stretch. 8, 9, and 10. Then I start on. No, that'll be the end. You're getting worried, weren't you? Have I. Boy, I'm sure glad I got this water. My throat. Have I, while putting spiritual interests first, been diligent in performing regular material duties today, doing my best? In other words, not only do we want to grow in our spiritual life, we have material duties that we need to do, don't we? Proverbs talks a lot about what they call the sluggard. Here's one I think is always gets me. It's Proverbs 26. I worked for a company for several years, and I was laid off back in the late 1990s. And I got a nice severance package, so I kind of was glad I got laid off, to tell you the truth. And I got another job in about 3 months. But those, I always, you know how you always see, if I just had time to do these things. Well, when I lost that job for a while, and I was still on a severance package, I thought, man, I'll do all these things I haven't had a chance to do. I painted the house, and I was gonna. But after a while, I think I wasted more time during those 3 or 4 months than I would ever waste, because I thought I don't have anything to do. I was like, I have nothing to do, and I'm thinking, well, I thought I wanted to have nothing to do. And it, you know what I'm saying? You always want to be growing, doing things. And Proverbs 26, I think this is one of my favorite verses in the Bible as far as humorous, I guess you could say, if I ever get there. Verse 13. The slothful or the lazy man says, there is a lion in the road, a fierce lion is in the streets. Now, how many people walk outside and there's a lion out in the front yard or out in the street? Now, you know, I'm sure there were some lions somewhere, but how many lions were out in front of there too? And yet what it's saying is the lazy person will find all these excuses why they can't do things. Now, there's none of us are perfect in this, but the point of the matter is we have duties in life, and if we do them, we'll be happier for it, and we'll grow as a person. Number 9, have I made the most of my time? Have I made the most of my time, or have I been weakened by unwatchfulness? Have I made the most of my time, or have I been weakened by unwatchfulness? You know, it's good to look at the news. It's good to know what's going on. Now, sure, you can overdo anything, but the point of the matter is we need to know what's going on because we want to watch. We want to learn. And like I said, I think the time I wasted the most of my time was when that little period when I didn't have a job. I just wasted so much time. Ephesians chapter 5. Verse 15 and 16. It says, see then that you walk circumspectly, or, you know, think it through, what he's saying, what we do. Not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time. Redeeming the time. And notice what he says, because the days are evil. We live in dangerous times. We live in evil times. God says, through the Apostle Paul, think about what we do, because we are in dangerous times. I know yesterday I had to go over to the hospital to a nursing home, take a member to see his father that didn't have a car. And before that, I'd gone to the grocery in our other car, and I had my cell phone, and then I stopped, and then I went to the car we usually drive. I went to the nursing home, and then the friend that was with me sort of wanted to get something to eat, so we stopped to get something to eat. And then I didn't lock my car. And then when I got back in the car, I didn't really think anything about it until I took him over to his place. And when I started to drive home, I looked down, I said, my cell phone is gone. Someone has stolen my cell phone. And I was mad at myself more than anything, because I thought, man, they stole my cell phone. Then I'm thinking, what am I going to do? And all these thoughts are going through my mind. And I remember when I got home, Penny said, well, how are things going? I said, oh, it was awful. Somebody stole my cell phone. I was just in a horrible mood. And then I went back out to get something out of the other car, and the cell phone had still there. I'd never even thought. I mean, this was like 2.5 hours. And I didn't have my phone. I didn't even realize I didn't have my phone. It just made my day. Suddenly my day went from way, way down here to, wow, this is a wonderful day. And it's amazing, isn't it, how little, you know, things can affect us. But it sure did make me think I'm going to lock my car from now on, even though nobody took anything. But we redeem the time, because we live in dangerous times. And number 10, the final one. What have I done for God's work and others today? What have I done for God's work and others today? You know, you can ask yourself, have I spent any time today doing things other than just pleasing myself? And yet, it's so easy. I think one of the most important things a Christian can do is find ways to serve others. Now, none of us are supermen or superwomen, but just any little thing we can do helps others. I remember so clearly back in Nashville, a group wanted to have a seniors dinner in the Nashville church, and it was an amazing job. A lot of the young people and the teenagers, they served, and then it was in Nashville. Met in an area where there was a nice area below where they could set up the tables, and it was really one of the nicest dinners I ever went to in a church, not because it cost a fortune, but because of all the serving, that people wanted to do this to serve the seniors. And what I'll always remember, and I don't know if I ever mentioned this or not, but there was one gentleman, his name was Milton Smith, and he was getting a little bit up there, and he was having a little trouble driving. And he and his wife had come in, and we were all inside getting ready, and someone came to me and said, Stan, we've got a problem. Mr. Smith has driven his car over the ditch. And I thought, what? So I went out there, and he had driven the car where it was hanging over a drop-off of about this much. Now, he was okay. They got out of the car, but his car was hanging there, and the car weighed a lot of, you know, those cars are big, and who's just going to pick up a car and move it? And there were about four of us out there, and we're like, what are we going to do? And I'll never forget, for once in my life, I said the right thing. I said, you know what? We need to just all silently say a prayer that God will show us how to get this car out of here. And so we just, you know, not, we just privately stood there, and each of us said a little something for a few seconds. And then after we finished praying silently, each of us, I said, you know, what we need is somebody with a big chain to just pull this car out of the ditch. And immediately, less than 30 seconds later, this truck pulled up. And we were on a site. We weren't on a big, it was like a residential area. This guy just showed up in this truck, and he said, can I help you? And I said, yeah, we just need a big chain. He said, oh, yeah, I got one right here in my trunk. And he just pulled that car right out like nothing happened. I thought, was that an angel? Well, he was an angel, all right, to help us out, regardless of whether he was an angel unaware. But it was like, what are the odds that somebody would just show up out of nowhere with a wrecker chain to pull that car out of the ditch? Then he was on his way. We didn't pay him anything because he didn't ask for anything. But what have I done to help others? A card, a call, there's so many things. A prayer to help others. So the road less traveled. Let's close by turning back to that scripture we began with in Matthew chapter 7. Verse 13 and 14. Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction. Anybody can go there. There are many who go in by it. And we've all been there. But we can go back out of that road and start walking down the other road. Because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way. It may seem difficult, but your life will go better. But it leads to life. And there are few that will automatically find it right away. Most people will tend to take the road that seems easier. You know, that Eldridge Fowler, he did a lot to help Pasadena. He would see Merritt tapping into the old Pasadena water system where he'd get his water for free. What a man. That's what I always think of when I think of Eldridge Fowler and I think of Hewitt C. Merritt.